This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Stories of the Supernatural. Wherever you find us, whether it's a video or podcast on your favorite platform, please like and subscribe to us so that you can get notification of when a new show is released. You can also find us on major social media platforms. If you go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, you can find links to the videos or MP3 files, which you can download and enjoy without commercial interruptions. If you're into classic horror, ghost, and adventure stories, I narrate Nightshade Diary, and you can find links at nightshadediary.com. If scary stories are your bag, and listening to encounters with cryptids, ghosts, dogmen, and other weird creatures sends a shiver up your spine, then go to supernaturalstorytime.com for links to our weekly podcasts. Noteworthy news about the paranormal world, true crime, conspiracy stories, and anything that is just plain weird can be found at eerie.news or visit the Stranger Than Fiction Stories tab at MiamiGhostChronicles.com. Please subscribe to my newsletter on Substack. Just go to mppelliser.com for a link. I want to thank you for being part of my audience, and I think you are all wonderful.
Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing? Good, I hope. I'm doing good. Feeling the, even though we are technically in spring here in Northern Florida, we're getting summer weather. It's in the 80s, which is good, you know, until, you know, a few weeks from now, and I'm like, all right, it's too hot, but yeah, it's nice. And we've got a lot of stuff coming up. I did a big planting of potatoes and they're coming up really quick, and all our fruit trees are doing really good. So I'm happy about that, because of course, you know, whenever we had our temperatures drop below freezing, I had to run out there and cover these plants up, the trees up, because I got trees out there. So anyway, let me get on to the good part. And the good part has to do with who the guest is for tonight. And her name is Lindsay Sharman. Now, she is the creator and host of Rogue Ways. She serves others through sharing analog, electric, concentric wisdom via exploration of conspiracy, culture, consciousness, spirituality, magic, questions, exploration, freedom, liberty, and community. She thinks critically and skeptically about literally everything, following the manifold paths toward deeper wisdom and understanding in this crazy journey of life. She's the author of Sign, Curve of Eons, and the Transformational Key of The Key of Transformational Healing. Help me welcome her. How are you doing today, Lindsay?
Hi, Marlene. I'm great. Thanks for having me here tonight.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure. Now, that's a lot of deep stuff that I read real quick in your bio.
there's a lot of it. Yeah.
Right. How did this something that you grew into as you were a child, or did you have an event that propelled you to seek, you know, to look at the world through this lens? What happened?
Oh, it's always such a hard question to answer, because it really was everything.
Okay.
You know, everything about my childhood, the way I was raised, the trauma I went through, the spiritual connection I found, some events that happened in my teenage years definitely opened my eyes to, you know, that there's more going on here than, you know, materialist atheists can describe and explain. And then, the rest of it was just sort of, you know, I say to people, I feel like I was kind of forced into my path. I don't know if I had a choice. And if I did, it definitely wasn't at a conscious level, but I just kept finding myself in places and doing things that were very spiritually oriented. I kept synchronistically landing myself in the laps of shamans who would teach me various things. And so eventually I grew to understand my connection to Source, my guides, my allies, and to work with them, and then to help other people heal as I have healed myself through these
types
of
things. So you were basically, and it sounds like, because, you know, sometimes people, like, those synchronicities, they happen, but they don't pay attention to them.
That's true.
But it sounds like you did. You kind of like realized something was going on.
Most of them were like impossible to ignore. I mean, I really couldn't have stopped. I mean, for example, I was walking in Quito in Ecuador, and I was just walking through a random building, and I was with, you know, three other people, and there was no one else really there. And this shaman just like popped out on this like multi-levels up in this building in this courtyard we were walking through, and he pointed at me and like yelled something in Spanish at me.
And you must have been like, what?
I was like, what's happening right now? And my, you know, boyfriend who was with me at the time spoke Spanish better than me. And he was like, oh, he wants you to come up there. And I was like, why would I go up to some yelling man that I've never, and he's like, no, he says he's a healer and he needs to heal you. And I was like, oh, well, this is a scam, you know, but
I can imagine. You must have been like, oh, I'm not going to fall for that.
No, I'm not going to fall for this. And then whatever he said, it was like so synchronistic with what I was thinking and had been thinking that I was like, oh, maybe I do need to go talk to him actually. And we were kind of like, well, we have plans, you know, we're leaving. We're not even, and then we're leaving tomorrow to another city and whatever. And he was like, well, come back tonight after your plans before you leave tomorrow. Like, I have to do this healing on you and whatever. And I was like, I mean, okay, I guess we'll give it a try. Like, whatever.
Okay.
You know, and all the other people with us were like, we've never, you know, and they live in that city and they explore there. And they were like, we've never seen him or had him yell to anybody.
Let me ask you, just out of curiosity, was his background indigenous?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He was a Taíta there. So we would call him a shaman, right? But there he was called a Taíta, which is like calling him a father. And he performed an indigenous ceremony with me and did a healing and it scared him. I mean, he was scared during it. He's
really okay.
Yeah, that scared me. But that happens also every time I end up in a shaman's lap.
So let me ask you something. Did he tell you why he got scared or what was it that he felt or witnessed that?
He said, you know, he said that first of all, when he had first seen me, he could tell there was a great darkness around me and that I needed extra protection from it.
Okay.
And I was like, well, yeah, I'm pretty familiar at this point. I had already had kind of a similar, but totally different shaman in a totally different place, like almost had this exact same experience. So I was like, yeah, this is like an old story with me. Mm-hmm. And then when he was doing the ceremony of the candle that represented me and my soul or something, like almost went out. And he said in his decades of doing this, he had never, ever had a candle almost go out. And if the candle went out, it would mean in his, you know, practice and his sort of background, it would mean certain death.
It's like don't breathe hard around that candle. I'm sounds like he had years of experience, so if he's telling you this,
and
what happened afterwards?
he kind of knew things that he shouldn't have known, and I felt totally different afterwards, which again, I people listening to this might not know this about me, but I started sort of from an atheist. I mean, in my youth, I had some Lutheran Christian background, but it was very weak. We just went sometimes. And honestly, it was usually just me and my mom. The rest of my family didn't even always go. And it was very much not like a big deal, but I did have that. But as a teenager, I was an atheist and a materialist, and I'm very science minded, logical minded, and skeptical. And I've kept that even now, as I am now, what I would call a shamanic healer, I'm still one of the most skeptical people. And I start from a place of saying, no, this is most likely not supernatural or magical. It's probably got an explanation.
I think it's better to be that way because you have a higher standard. That doesn't mean you don't believe.
No. But it just takes me evidence to get there. of course.
And let's face it, sometimes there's people that are frauds. Let's call it by what it is. So,
and I would say probably most of them are. I would say most people who claim to be healers are not. I would say that most people who claim to be deeply spiritual are not, and that they're in it for some other reason. So I think or influence or control.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. Yeah. Exactly.
So
not altruistic. How's that?
I was skeptical of this man for sure, but when he started also then knowing things that he couldn't have known, and you know, and the way I felt completely different and just lighter and protected afterwards and safer, like it was very different. And
that's what I was going to ask you afterwards. How did you feel?
Very light, very good. I had amazing dreams that night, and it was very intense. So another thing that when I was leaving his office, he asked me, you know, my boyfriend is translating all of this, which I'm sure was just a trip for him. But the Taíta asked me, you know, what are you going to do or something? And I was telling him, oh, tomorrow we're going to go to the real equator. And it's different from what the settlers, the Spaniards, you know, the European influences said was the equator. Okay. The indigenous people there had their equator. They already knew it was the equator. They called it the middle of the earth, the media de mundo. and we were going to go to that equator. There's still to this day, you know, a big tourist thing over at the white people's.
Right, at the right? So-called equator, right.
But you can go to the real equator with the, and we were going to go to that. So I was like, this is, and he started laughing. I mean, he laughed so hard. Like it was really? The funniest was joke like, okay. I'd ever told. And he said, okay, I see your problem. He said, you still think you get to choose. And I got like chills and I was like, what does that even mean? Like, that sounds ominous. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whatever, you know, and then we left and I still in my head, I was like, I don't know if that mattered or if that guy was a real, I feel different, but you can do that to yourself when you have right, these expectations, yeah. Whatever. So the next day we, we went to go to the equator and we were going to the equator and it's this bus and another bus and another bus. And we finally get far out of Quito, we're towards the equator and we get off at the right spot. We find a taxi and we tell him we don't want to go to this Disneyland, you know,
right,
equator.
The tourist trap, to the
real
one.
Right. And we're just pointing at the book and we're describing it. And, you know, my boyfriend speaks really, really excellent Spanish. So there's, okay. I know there's no confusion, but some people are just rude. So this person, for whatever reason, decided to bring us somewhere completely different. It was still a kind of cool place. It was some ruins and it was old. It was ancient, you know, it was. Mm-hmm. It was neat, but it was not the right place. By the time he dropped us off there and left and we figured out that we were not actually at the equator, we were pretty upset and then realized no one was around and there was no way to get another cab. No one goes out
oh
to where
my
we're
God,
at.
You're so, kidding.
So
wow.
We had to like walk all this way back and finally get close enough to get another cab. And by the time we had done that, if we didn't get back and get the bus back to Quito, we wouldn't make it home that night. Okay. So we didn't ever make it to the equator. And I heard him in my head laughing going, you still think you get to choose? And I was like, did he know this? So
right.
That was weirder. Then we ride the bus back to Quito. We're getting in and I realize we're going a completely different way than when we left. And I have this like excellent ability to map everything. I just see the world in directions and maps. I'm never lost. I always understand how to get wherever. So even though I don't know the street names or exactly yeah. where we are, I understand like we've never been where we are right now. And I don't even know what part of the city we're in. And my map is like breaking down because we're not coming back in the way we left. And right. It starts to make me really nervous. And I'm like, this is not good. Like we don't know where we are actually. And if we don't know where we are, we don't know how to get back to our hotel, you know, and it's getting late, like the sun is going down, it's going to be dark soon, it's going to be dark in a random neighborhood in Quito, like it could be fine and it could be really dangerous, like we don't
sure,
know where
I'm
where
sure
we are.
You were probably repaying all these movies of like
yes yeah. and I'm hearing him say like you still think you get to choose, so I'm like oh my God. So that's I'm starting funny. To kind of freak out and get nervous and finally, as I'm trying to just figure out like what do we do, what's the best thing to do in this situation, it's going to get dark, like what. And I look across like the skyline and I see the spire of this specific church that we had walked by the day before. And I was like, okay. I know that spire. If we get off right now, we can walk to it. And then I know how to get home from there. Like we're in right. the right spot.
Yes.
So I got really excited. We jumped off the bus. We're running towards that spire. I'm realizing, okay, cool. We go this way. And now we're like almost home. And we get to this really big main street. It's like two blocks off from where our hotel was, our hostel, I should say. And up this street, all of a sudden, I realize like something's happening. And then I realize there's way more people than normal. Then I realize there's helicopters. Then I start seeing these flags come up over this hill in the road and that there's no cars on the road. And I'm like, what is happening right now? And then they're like rainbow flags are waving and all these people in helicopters. I'm like, oh, there's some kind of like massive protest going on right now. And I'm like, this is crazy. And right then I saw that same image from a dream I had 2 years wow. earlier, 2 years earlier before I even knew I would go to Ecuador. And in the dream, I was in some South American country and I'd been on a bus and been pretty nervous and scared. And I had jumped off the bus and just ran in a certain direction. And I ran into a huge mass of people and they had rainbow flags in the dream. And so I was like, oh my God, this is the dream. And what came after that in the dream is that I had run to a little turn and I turned up a little alleyway and there was a white church and the white church had a fountain in front of it. And I had never seen this fountain before, but since I'm remembering this dream, I remember the fountain from the dream and I was like, what if it's real? And so I start running. I'm like, come with me. I have to find this dream church. And I run and I turn and I turn, and there's a white church and it has a little fountain in front of it. And I just sat down and was like, what is life even? Like, what is even happening?
Right.
Because I was never supposed to be right there right then. I was supposed to have gone to the equator and come back on a totally different bus and got off at the right bus stop and just went up to my hostel.
Yeah,
and
it's instead, like, man, I got off like, on the right. You were pushed totally off what you had planned.
Right. Which then again, I heard him laughing and saying, you still think you get to choose. And I was like, I didn't get to choose anything about this day, but something in me knew it was going to happen 2 years ago.
Exactly.
That right. I was basically right.
There was no way that you knew on that day, you know, and of course that it would ever happen. It could have been just a dream.
I had no connection. At the time I had it, I was like, well, that was a really weird dream. Sure. But I just had no other thought about it ever again until that moment when I saw it playing out in real life. And I was like, I've dreamt this before. Like, I've dreamt this exact scene. And if I go there and there and there, there will be a white church. And there was.
So what happened? You were able to make it back to your hostel.
And... we made it back to the hostel. Everything. And obviously, we went on with the trip and yeah, here I am. But it was just, you know, that was one of the many things that kind of may seem meaningless to some people. But to me, sure. It was like definitely meant to show me, A, that my soul has a plan for me. And right. B, that I don't get to consciously choose anything about it, actually, even though I think I'm doing that. That's not what's happening. See that even if I do try to choose and try to push and try to force, universe will find ways to get me back where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right. So I was like, I'm supposed to go to the equator. I'm supposed to do this. The universe was like, actually, you're just supposed to be standing here around sunset.
Just so that you saw that what you dreamt 2 years ago
right.
was precognitive in a way. It's like, that's an incredible story.
It was a crazy trip.
What happened when you came back? What did this stuff just keep percolating in your head? Like, okay. And I know what you're talking about. Like, you're trying to be analytical about it. Like, am I trying to delude myself or really was what took place?
Right.
What happened when you got back?
I mean, I was, again, one of those things where I couldn't deny. I mean, something what people would call metaphysical or spiritual or profound is happening here. Normal, logical, linear time, space, reality cannot explain it. But these things had been happening to me my whole life. So this is just one more, you know, sprinkle on top of the pile that helped me get to the place where I just really at some point cannot stop. I can't deny anymore. That I'm called to do something of a spiritual nature with my
That's abilities. What I was gonna ask you. Yeah. All of this, what did you think it was leading you towards or pushing you towards that?
I kind of know. I had been told. So one of the previous shamans that I also accidentally ended up being taught by and healed by, she basically told me, she was like, well, you're a seer, you're a visionary. She's like, you can receive messages from, you know, angels and beings and people on the other side. And she's like, but you're also a healer.
Okay.
And I was kind of like, I think she's just making this stuff up to make me feel
good. She's trying to make me feel good.
Yeah. But it's funny because my whole life I had also had experiences of doing exactly those things. You know, and other people receiving from me and telling me, oh my God, it's like you're my angel right now, or it's like you just healed me, or it's like this and this. And I was always like, oh, people are so nice, you know? I didn't really take it as anything else than what anybody could probably do if they wanted to, or if they were just like noticed the truth of their souls, or you know, or just like in touch with themselves. But after all of these types of experiences and all these shamans and all of these teachers just sort of, you know, plopping into my life, it was like, no, this is actually who I am and what I am. And this isn't everybody. I'll say it is everybody. Anybody out there could become anything they want. Psychic, visionary, healer, seer, anything. Anyone can do it. This is a human aspect. It's not like, you know, I'm chosen or special or different. Sure. Right. But not everyone wants to.
And
some people, there's a lot of things they'd have to do to get there. But everyone can do it. So that's true too, but not everyone is doing it. Not everyone has the propensity to it. And not everyone has the sort of, I'd say, allies and guides that are sort of gathered around me and help me through all of these things. So
some people are meant to do things.
Yeah.
Even everybody might have the ability. Some people are meant that's their path. In other words,
That's what it feels like to me. I can't deny it anymore. Like I said, that I was sort of meant for this. But I don't think it's that like some council of beings were like, we choose Lindsay. I think my soul was right. Like, okay, well, this is the life. We're going to do it like this. you're going to be this person. And this is what it's going to be like. I've just more and more, the more I've accepted that, the more mm-hmm. I have, you know, claimed it and proclaimed it and said, yes, this is true, the more gifts sort of flow to me and through me. And that's been pretty amazing.
So how did you go when, let's say you come back and you're here and you're like thinking, okay, hint, hint, I've caught on. This is what happened. Did you get, like, you know how they say, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear?
Yes.
Was that what happened with you?
That had been happening all along. I mean, that's what all those shamans were. Every time I was ready for the next step, there would be just this perfect, it was almost always a shaman. Sometimes it was more like a spiritual teacher or just like a scholar or something. But yeah, I'd always have teachers. I still do always have the perfect teacher.
Okay.
They're always changing. I know for some people they find like the teacher. And that's
And I guess that's what I was wondering. Did you find that one person that said, okay?
No.
Okay. So you were like the right person would come along at a certain point.
The right person has always just come along and the right. I've never been seeking any of them, period.
Okay.
At no level of my being have I been like, I would like a teacher now. They just appear. But it is always true that when they appear, it is at the perfect time for me to sort of start shifting or sort of shedding some old, you know, doubts or aspects of self or trauma or things that were in the way of me really like proclaiming and stepping into my power. And, you know, I couldn't have designed it better if I tried. But a lot of the truth is that a lot of what I've learned or what I practice or the types of healings that I provide for people hasn't come from any humans. It has just come from my guidance and my allies and the messages I receive and the guidance I receive from whatever you want to call those types of beings. So people ask me, you know, who taught you? And I'm like, there's not really a good answer to this question. there's no person who taught me most of this.
You're a shaman. At what point did you realize or feel that I'm ready to be the shaman instead of being on the other side of that equation?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was actually only maybe 4 years ago or so, maybe 5 years ago at the most. And actually it coincided with a huge shift in my life where I suddenly, seemingly to other people, but to me, like it took forever to get to this point. But to other people, it seemed sudden. I just left my entire career behind. I sold my house. I sold my car. Yeah,
that's so funny. I've heard of this, but of people that it comes that it's that drastic. Yes,
it is. I didn't even know how cliche it was, and then the more I tell the story, people are like, "Oh, you got to that point." I'm like, "Oh, that's like a point that you get to."
Yeah.
But I just knew I could not. I could not. I was a teacher, of course.
Okay.
This is like the teachers and nurses and a lot of these helping professions. Like a lot of us are actually like spiritual healers, and we're just trying to do something that makes money and sort of fits with what we actually know we're supposed to be doing. You know, so I had been teaching for 14 years. I'm a master teacher. I'm a board certified teacher. I love teaching. I love students. I love kids. But I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, the adults in that industry are often insane and horrible. So
I'm sure
they think I'm insane. Yeah.
She's not going to soften it.
No.
Okay.
I'm sure they think I'm insane. They showed me very clearly that they thought I was insane when I said that I was going to leave teaching and I was going to drive around the continent in a van. They looked at me like I was crazy.
Uh-huh.
One woman asked me, "Do you mean like a homeless person?" And I'm like, "I mean, I guess if you think that like traveling the country in a van is homeless, then yes, like a homeless person, I guess."
Right.
So, you know, so I did. I left teaching and I just didn't, I couldn't do it anymore. Not like that, at least. I'd love to start my own school someday, but that's a whole other story. And I sold my house and I sold my car so that I didn't have any monthly payments. And I reduced all of the things in my life. I got rid of everything that wasn't just essential to me. And even some of the stuff I kept, I'm like, I don't know if I even needed that, but I pared it down to a few boxes. And I had all the stuff I needed in my van and I just went driving around the continent. So I did most of the Western United States and I did most of Western Canada, and I actually planned to do Eastern Canada, Eastern United States, but mm-hmm. I fell in love in the middle and I landed in Colorado here in the middle of the continent. And so in the middle of the trip, in the middle of the continent, I found my soulmate, and here I am 5 years later. So, you know, I think that all had to happen for me to really say, well, what am I going to do instead? You know, I had this whole vision of creating this company or doing this stuff, and I knew I wanted it to be with healing, and I knew I wanted to teach if I could still, and I this and that, and all this stuff, but I didn't really expect it to just be full blown, you know, healing and spiritual services and teaching in the way that it has become. And I feel really, really blessed that that is what has happened. Right.
And it's like you said, you know, I had plans to do the East Coast. You know that saying, life got in the way? No, it's like your destiny gets in the way. It's like, nah, no, we're going to stop right here in the middle.
See, it was that same thing. You still think you get to choose.
Exactly.
I don't actually get to choose.
And when people come to you, when let's say that they come to you as for spiritual healing, is it based on spiritual problems, emotional trauma, like you said, let's say from the past that now they're adults and they might still be having the effects? How do you work that the shaman part when somebody comes to you for help?
Yeah, this is what's so fascinating about the way it's developed for me, is I think it's very different from what anybody else is doing, just like everything I've ever done always has been. I've been doing tarot since I was a teenager. And when people get a reading from me, they're like, that is not like any reading I've ever had. I'm like, I've never done another type of, I've never seen other people even do tarot. So I wouldn't even know. Right. I'm just doing this. And it happens to be very different. And the healing I do is similar. You know, when people come to me, they have all sorts of things. They have health issues. They have, you know, mental issues. They have emotional issues. They have trauma issues. They have spiritual things happening and going on, spiritual questions, spiritual problems, family problems, relationship problems. Like, there's nothing that I haven't helped people with. And and I do it at whatever level they're comfortable with. So I have all these different services people can choose from, and all the these different ways that they can then, you know, engage with what I offer. But just like my whole life, I was actually doing this with people without really meaning to or knowing it. No matter what level of service you receive from me, you're sort of always getting, I just tell people the blessing is always coming through just because we're connected and intending to heal.
Right.
And it's just happening. So there's some things that are way higher and more direct level blessings and healings. And there's things that are, you know, more like coaching and talking, but even then the blessing is coming through because I've set the space up and set the intention up and done the work ahead of time to make it that way.
And I imagine it also has to do with the way the person is willing to receive it.
Yes.
Because
it's 100% true.
Not everybody, I don't know. You know how they say your reality is your perception. Some people, I'm sure that, and I'm sure you're aware, sometimes trauma can express itself physically or spiritually.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And they might think it's one thing, but it's really rooted in something else.
That's very, very common. It's almost everything is like that, right? That someone comes to me for one thing, but what we actually need to work on is a little bit different. A lot of times people come to me and they think they have a demonic attachment or interference, and they don't. It's actually their own psyche and their own, you know, trauma that is sort of getting in the way. And sometimes they do, but it's just, it can be very different. And I also have, you know, I have short little healings I do with people. And then, like I said, I have these big, massive, longer healings that I do with people. And sometimes the short little healings are like giant, like it blows me away. I'm like, how did you get all of that through? Because I don't get to choose. Again, I've learned this lesson well, like I don't get to choose. But some people just come and their soul and their willingness and their openness is just so ready that it just happens. And I've had people had miraculous healings physically from these short little, all kinds of things. And then I've had people who have done like the big, huge, the whole long healing and gotten still a lot, but not as much. And I can tell it's because they weren't really trusting. They don't really know. Right. They're very like, you know, so we can do a lot, but we can't do as much as we can if you're just like, throw me on the crucible, like I'm done.
Right. It's like, I want the help, but then when I'm trying to help you, you're pulling back and holding back. So it's okay. You want the help, but not... And you know what? I don't know if you've run across this, that sometimes people might come complaining of whatever the thing is, but there's almost a part of them that identifies with what that problem is.
Yeah.
So it's almost, they don't want to let it go. It's like, especially if it's been with them for a while, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, oh, you're going to tear away my identity. And it's like, no, you think it is because maybe it's, you know, this is this feeling or this thought process has been with you for so long that you think it's you.
Yeah. That's like half the work because it's a habit for so many people, right? Yes. How many years have you been waking up scared or in pain or whatever the thing is, right? And so now you're saying, well, I'm so sick of this. I want to heal. But you're still, you have all this neuro, elasticity issue, right? Yes. That is like, it doesn't want to shift. And so you have to find the ways to really like reprogram yourself and train yourself into something else. So that is part of what I do too. And I love that actually, because as difficult as that is, as hard as that is, as much as we both see just how crestified and you're just like stuck in this thing, there's actually some simple and powerful ways to shift that stuff out. And, you know, it can be gone pretty quickly, actually.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right? You know, sometimes people think that a complicated problem has to have a complicated solution.
Yeah.
That's not always the case. On the contrary.
Yeah.
And to them, it's like, this is a really big problem. Yes. You know, whatever it is, because of course, when things happen to you, it's a real big thing. And when somebody comes along and offers a solution that's very simple, you're like, can't be that easy.
Yeah. Well, I had this woman come a little while ago, you know, and she wasn't even coming for this specific problem. She was all this other stuff she wanted to talk about and deal with. And, she had something with her hands and her fingers were like stuck, and it was an arthritis type of thing. And they were just stuck in like an unnatural position. She couldn't use them. And as we were kind of looking at and dealing with the other stuff, I started noticing the spirit was just going to those fingers. And I started massaging my own fingers on my own hand. And I just told her there's, you know, energy flowing to your hands. I think I saw that you have like some sort of issue there. And I just want you to know that you're receiving a blessing for that right now. And, you know, we kept talking. She's like, oh, well, that's old. It's not going anywhere. So even as we were doing this, she had that mindset come up. Like there's nothing that can shift this. But as we were talking, as the blessing continued, she's like, it feels warm. And I'm like, yeah, that's a blessing. It can do anything. Like just let it do whatever it does. Don't be attached to it. Just let it work while we're doing this other stuff. And at the end, she lifted her hand up and her fingers were straight. And she said, how did you do that? And I said, you did that. You let yourself do that by allowing this energy to come in and releasing the belief that nothing could shift that. And just in that, and if you just keep doing that, that's going to stay that way.
And you know what? Sometimes, believe it or not, and I don't know if you've run across this, where people will go to a medical doctor, and I'm not putting down medicine, no, whatever. Right. But let's say if a doctor, let's say you get like you said stiff fingers or whatever, swollen, and some doctor tells you, you know, that's the first stages of arthritis, and you know, it's might get better, but not really. In other words, they're kind of telling you, feeding this thing into your head that it might get worse as time goes by, and you buy into it. So all of a sudden it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, and your mind really is the one that's creating it based on that. You believe this professional or this expert told you this. And then like what you said, it's really what you believe. It's not what, because you believe them. And this is a product of, you know, whatever that is, that symptom is. I don't know, have you run across that where people believe some medical diagnosis, like, that's it, I'm resigned that this is me.
Yes. Yes. And it is, it feeds into that exact same process where we're like, well, that's who I am. And that's what I am. And, you know, part of us, for me, at least, I've had some massive physical health issues in my life. And one of them, when I was young, was scoliosis. I have really severe S-shaped curvature in my spine, and I had to get surgery for it and all this trauma. And so, you know, part of me, and I laugh at it now, but part of me was like, yes, now people are going to have to be nice to me. They're going to have to do things for me. They're going to have to listen to me when I'm upset. Like, you know, I was a teenager, but like that same mentality can be going on for any of us at any point, because most of us have never received what we deserve. Most of us have never gotten enough of what we need, which is just love and attention. And you know, right? Honest.
And this is like, it's like a secondary gain. Like you said, because at first blush, you think, who would want that?
Right.
But you don't realize that it's like you were thinking, okay, if I got to deal with this, I got to get something out of this somehow. Yep. Like what you were saying is,
I can get out of anything now. I can go, oh, my back hurts. I can't do that. Sorry. Like,
yeah.
You know, and it's at the same time, it actually was horrible and really painful and awful. But like, there's this part of us, and a lot of us have this part of us that we're kind of cashing in the victim coins, right? We're like, oops, there's my, I'm going to take this little bit over here. And it's sad. And really, that's another, we're all working on giving ourselves enough love, enough attention, enough presence, because we have been starved of that in this society. Sure. We don't have a lot of connected, really healthy, you know, presence with one another. It's not, it's not very common in our culture here.
Sure. Right. And it's almost like, you know, the person that doesn't always get food all the time. So when they get it, they, you know, they stuff themselves because you just never know when you're going to get it again. So I better like, I'm going to like be a glutton about this, you know, like what you just described, which is if it's always around, you know, if you know, you're always, I want to use the food example. If you always know you have food available.
Yes.
Yeah, you tend to be okay with like, I can eat now and I can eat later and that's okay. Because I know the food is there. It's not going away. And then the problem I think comes along when you, that be, that that feeling or that whatever becomes you, you identify with it.
Yes.
And yeah, that's divorcing people from that. I think sometimes must be really hard. And let me ask you, when people come to you for a healing, have you ever had to tell them this is more than what they thought it was? Like when you look, like something like what happened when that shaman in Quito was like, what? You know, like in other words, he was, this is, wow, this is
he
intense.
Was worried, yeah.
All right. Has that ever happened to you?
I don't think so. I think it's almost always the other way where people think it's way worse than it actually is.
Okay.
And when people have come to me with, and they do have pretty dark, you know, energy and things going on, they know it. They're not, they're not deluded about it. They're like, yeah, this is, what do I do about this? So, you know, most of those people are similar to me actually, where they're, I think healers and,
So they, in other words, they, whether it's on a conscious or subconscious level, they know that this is the origin of whatever it is that, and I'm sure you understand, you know, like the human condition or human bodies, we have things that go on with us that come and go physically, organically. And then there's that long lasting thing that always is around, whether it's a thought process or spiritual or if it's expressed itself in a physical form. Have you ever come across anybody that's come to you and when you, I'm going to say read them, I don't know what the process is, but you find something that this, that whatever's happening with them, it's karmic. In other words, I'm sorry, but this is your karma based on whatever. Have you ever come across that?
Yeah. And it's, there's still a lot we can do, but yes, there's a lot less we can do. Karma. Yeah.
Right.
Which is okay. You know, and people, I think, have a really hard time accepting that and understanding that sometimes, which is fine. And that's going to lead them on other journeys and other pathways. And, you know, I think that's great. I have that. You have that. We all have these things that like, it actually has to be gone straight through the center of it. There's no undoing this or releasing this. So I also always just tell people, you know, I never am going to guarantee you anything. I'm not going to guarantee you that we heal a certain thing. I'm not going to guarantee you that you get a certain message. I'm not nothing. All I'm going to guarantee you, I should say, is that we're going to spend this time doing healing. And whatever happens during that time,
that can be healed, I guess. At this point, it's like something that we healed as in, or get better. Because I think, sometimes when we have certain challenges, how's that? It's something that it, like, I'm sorry, but you're going to, like you said, you have to go through it, work it out, you know, deal with it. And nobody can come like as in a shaman or somebody else can come
and just do,
and do the heavy lifting for you.
Yeah. It's no, like, and a lot of people do want that, but it's interesting, you know, the tools that we can give people like that can, that can shift your karmic balance so quickly. And part of that has to do with your own conception and understanding of what's happening and your role in it, right? And most of the time it involves you taking responsibility for yourself. Oh, I was going to
say responsibility, responsibility,
Right? And that's hard for most of us to do.
Right, like you didn't do it before, but now the only way you're going to get out from under it is to deal with it.
Right, and accept it and say, yeah, I did that. So, you know, and some of it comes from other lifetimes, obviously, whether people subscribe to that or not, I've experienced it. So for me, it's like fact. We don't need to agree on it, but anyways, some of it comes from that and you can't go back and change that. Right. So some people feel really slight. They're like, why is this happening to me? I can't go back to that life and change anything I did. Right. I don't even know for sure if that's really how things are. But it's like, well, yes, but you can understand that that having done that, if that happened, that you do have this balance then, and you can understand that anything negative happening to you, you've done before to someone else. Right. And you can start, it just starts to shift things for you. And you start to say like, oh, okay, well then, A, I don't want to hurt people ever again. As much as possible, I'm going to try to always be the best me and do the right thing so that I don't cause this back onto myself over and over again.
Exactly.
But you can also start just having that understanding and that forgiveness for yourself and forgiveness for those people, asking forgiveness from the souls that you've hurt in those lifetimes. And I've seen miraculous shifts in karma from doing just that, just saying, yes, I did that. I'm so sorry I did that. I genuinely am asking forgiveness for this. And I forgive anyone who's ever done this to me 100%, all lifetimes, all places. I forgive you. I release that. And your karma will then release too. And I'm not saying it's always just that quick, but I've seen it be that quick. And it has to do with the level of honesty and genuine, you know, genuine feeling that you have in it. You're not trying to just like, oh, okay, if I say these things, it'll go away. Right. You're like, no, you actually like feel it and engage with it.
Of course. And it's like, it's heartfelt. And you know, you can, you know, like if somebody's listening to you, you can say it, but if you really don't feel it or regret it or whatever, it's like, okay, you can sit there and talk and nothing's going to happen. Have you ever come across anybody with your shamanic work where basically they're either influence or acting out on a vow that they took in a previous life?
Yes. Yeah, I see that a lot too. There's actually some of the demonic, attachments will be because of vows, not just like way back. Like And some people don't believe that you can undo a vow. And so there's that to get past with some people, I guess. Like you have to believe in your own ability to be completely and truly free, free will and completely empowered in that. And that sometimes has to happen first, but you can rescind any vow. You can revoke any vow.
Well, you know what? I think that in our modern society, we always see vows as in legality. Like if it's, unless it's written on a piece of paper, you know, legally, and then of course you go through legal means to undo it. A vow, as in spoken or whatever, is like, what? True. So I changed my mind, you know, whatever. And that's not always the case.
No, it has longer lasting repercussions than we might think sometimes. But if you do go into your own soul level of being and you sit deeply in that place and you say, and you take back that vow and you rescind that vow and you replace it with something else, of the light, then that can be undone. So I've guided people through that many times too. And I honestly think it's just a good practice for any of us, if we want to just go and sit deeply inside, meditate, however people might enjoy that. I have free classes on my, Thinkific, rogueways.thinkific.com. If people want to go take a free class on meditation and mantra, that might help them. But you can go in and sit there and just say, in all lifetimes, in all timelines, in all places, I rescind and revoke all vows, especially with, you know, those dark negative entities, all contracts, all relationships, all agreements, like throw in whatever words you can think of that you want to, right? There's no ultra formal way to do this. It's the intention really that matters. And just cast those out and then say to yourself in your soul, I invite in an alignment with the whatever your conception is, heaven, light, source, angels, Buddhas, you know, whatever you like, instead. So again, it's important to replace it. And some people don't want to do that. And I don't have a better way. So they can either, I think, vows, try and rescind them without replacing them, see if it works for them, or replace it with the light.
And you know what? You could always ask yourself, you know, your disbelief, is it really underneath it on the level is that you don't want to lose that vow? You know, there's something there that somehow feeds your soul, whatever, even though you might be like very, you know, you feel like you're suffering for it. But have you ever encountered people like with what they call parasites, as far as maybe on their aura or something like that? And they don't understand how to get rid of it. In other words.
Yeah. Those are, I'm going to maybe shock some people, but I've never met anyone without any. I shouldn't say that. There are very few people, but it's very few people. You are of a pretty pure presence and intention constantly to not have any of those things.
That's a hard thing to do.
Most people are so far from I'm far from that.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say, unless you live in a mountain under the rock, you know.
Right. I do a lot of practice each day. I do a lot of presence building. I'm getting better and better all the time. I am not 100%. So I have them too. But I have a good spiritual hygiene and practice regularly to release them and replace them with, you know, replace the energy with my own and with light and just clarify. And more, you know, I'll have less and less of those. And the way I see them on the spiritual plane is the big ones are like when people are, you'll see people like addicted to like heroin or even alcohol, right? And they'll have some pretty like hefty ones that you can tell have been there for a while. Abusive people suffering from abuse, a lot of these things that we see as mental illness or things that we see as social degradation, these are often have parasitic entities attached to them. But there's like these little guys, I just kind of feel like they're like gnats or something, and they're just kind of around everyone, and they're just kind of like sucking off of the stuff you just shoot off energetically all the time because you're not really paying that much attention.
Sure. Yeah. And do you ever do anything with clearing whether it's parasites or anything, let's say where a person lives, or is it just strictly on their body or their aura?
I'll do house clearings. And I just, it's hard because it's with people and with places, you know. The real thing is teaching them how to keep it up, right? Yes. Just like even that hand healing we were talking about, like we got to keep it going, right? And so that's why a lot of my focus becomes teaching people, okay, here's what you do now. From now on, as often as possible, every day or however, you're going to be doing this. And all of them are good things for all of us to do.
Don't you ever get people that say, oh, what do you mean? I got to keep doing this?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, if you want to go pay so-and-so however much to like say that it's done forever, feel free. Right. But I don't personally buy that.
You know, it's like, oh, you clean your house once and that's it. You're done. You know, of course you're going to have to
There's no quick fixes in spiritual work. There's no pills.
No, there isn't. Yeah. Because again, we live, like you said, we live in this world that things happen to you, you witness it, you react to it, you know, whatever. And there's just no way that you can remain unaffected, I guess.
Yeah.
At some degree.
Like you said, unless you live under the rock.
Right. You know, that's the thing. You know how you always see the aesthetic that lives on the mountain going, and I was like, man, that's easy to do because everybody leaves you alone. It's when you engage in daily life with other humans and everything around us that gets messy.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's
the messy part.
Yeah. And that's why we can all kind of stop and congratulate ourselves that we're even here having this conversation and understanding it, because we're surrounded with all that chaos out there.
Of course. And it's, you know, there's no way to escape it. Even no matter what, you know, and of course, even if let's say you're one of these people that's all the time inside, it's going to come at you, whether it's through the computer or what you see, even what you read. There's a million ways that it'll get to you always, you know. And there's just, it's very difficult to, how can I say it? No matter how conscientious you are about what you take in or believe, how's that? It's always stuff that seeps in. And then depending on a lot of things, you know, what, like you said, your background, your life experience, what you do with it.
Yeah.
All right. Like some, like you said, some, you know, you've got somebody with a traumatic past, something happens or they witness something and it triggers something in them where another person, it's like, okay, well, that was pretty bad, but that's it.
Yeah.
But for this person, you know, it could, you know, or the parasite or anything like that, which basically what they would, from what you're describing, they feed off our energy, right? Is what you're describing in a way.
Yeah. They're just like a physical parasite. There has to be something there for them to find enjoyable and live off of, or else they wouldn't be there. And this is yet another level of self-responsibility, as we say, well, you can feel victimized by the parasite. But the truth is the parasite wouldn't be there except for the choices you make. Sure. So the better choice is to say, I'm responsible for the presence of this parasite. It doesn't mean you have to say like, okay, well, hooray for the parasite. Let's go. No, you then say, well, what do I need to shift in order to make sure that no parasite can feed off of me? Okay. Some of those things we listed are pretty straightforward. Like, well, if you're an alcoholic, you can't drink anymore. Sorry. Sure. If you're a heroin addict, you have to find a way to stop doing heroin.
Right.
A lot of these things are easier said than done.
I think that personally, a lot of people with addiction problems, parasites are what stops them from staying sober. You know, these people that go into rehab and they keep going back and they keep going back and they really want to stop because, and they just keep, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, and I'm not saying no, but you know, the addiction where your body, the reward centers in your brain are, this is what they want. Yes, I'm not saying no.
Right.
But I think that behavior where it just keep going back, I think has there's a portion of it that you can attribute to parasites.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're the, you know, people will have this, you know, I talk to people about this. They're like, well, what is that when I'm like doing this thing and all of a sudden I'll just sort of feel like this energy or this voice and it'll be like, oh, you know, you suck, you're stupid, like you should go have a beer or whatever. It's like, oh, that's the parasite for sure.
Yes, exactly.
Like that's the parasite. It's coming through you. It's making you think it's your own thought. It's not your thought. That's them. Mm-hmm. And you're still responsible for creating the environment in which it's harder and harder for that parasite to even talk to you or through you. And you're still responsible for not going and having the beer.
Right. Well, or, you know, you always have the, let's be friends. You know, you had a really hard day. You deserve a drink.
Yeah.
That was really rough. You know, that kind of thing also, like, you know, really somebody like, even among humans, the person that's pretending to be your friend really isn't.
Yeah.
It's that comes in a lot of formats.
Or the person that has their own parasite and they're trying to do that to themselves and they just want you to say it because then it's even easier for them. Like, yeah, let's just go have two pizzas and a carton of ice cream and, you know, like we deserve
it. And a pitcher full of beer to go with it. Yay.
I think we deserve something healthy, actually. But because I know there's people every time I talk about this who are like, oh, well, you just don't know. Well, yes, I do. I've been addicted to nearly every substance known to man. I've been through trauma. I have complex post-traumatic stress disorder. I've been diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, anxiety, depression, everything. Okay. I have multiple physical severe disorders. Like I've had to come back from all that. So I do actually know what it's like.
Right.
And I know how hard it is. So I understand it from both sides now. I understand it from having lived through it. And I understand it now from helping other people go through it too. And it is still our responsibility. We are responsible for ourselves. You know that I love this meme that was floating around. It's like, you're not responsible for the trauma that happened to you. You are responsible for healing from it.
Yes, of course. I was going to say, yes, sometimes we are a victim of circumstance, especially if you're a child, let's say where, you know, and even then sometimes things happen to you. There's no way to escape it, but you're absolutely right. What comes afterwards, you know, are you going to continue to exist under the shadow of this event or whatever? Yeah, then that, like you said, then it's falls in your court. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
That is difficult. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, but what's the alternative? Live in this, whatever it's created in your life. Yeah. Like you said,
this half life of just degradation and like never quite really feeling good. And we can thrive. We can feel fantastic and amazing. I remember this point in my life that I hit at some point and everyone, all my friends, my longtime friends were like, it's really cool. Like you smile now.
Like, oh my God.
I didn't smile before.
Wow.
Like they're like, oh, you like laugh sometimes. And I'm like,
isn't that incredible when you hear that? Didn't you be like, what do you mean I'm not smiling? You mean I wasn't smiling?
I wasn't smiling for years. I didn't even know it. And now I'm like this person, and people okay. imagine that I've never suffered. And I'm like, well, good. I'm glad I make it look easy. That's awesome.
Did you come across any teacher, shaman, or anybody that you, like you said, that you ran across, but that you could say this person really had a profound effect on taking me to the next level?
Yeah, that's hard to say. I mean, that shaman I just described, for sure. I know when I was very young, when I was a teenager, I read Conversations with God. That really shifted me. I was in a pretty weird space, and that really helped me get back out of that weird space and back onto what I think was a more productive path. So maybe that sort of counts, but
sure.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, because it will just, again, often be very synchronistic. Like, someone will say something, I'll hear a podcast, and that's pretty cool. But then, like, a book by a totally different person will fall into my lap, and it's the exact same topic. And, you know, so I'm kind of like learning from everything all at once, and it just kind of congeals into, you know, the understanding I was meant to have at that time. And so it's hard for me to sort of like list specific people.
Sure. And you know what? And it's really funny, because really the methodology can differ, but the results are very common.
Yes.
I had a person that I knew that she was doing missionary work down in South America. I can't remember what country she was in, Colombia, one of these countries in that area. She says she lives here in the United States, but she would go visit down there. And she says that they brought this older lady that she says that she was she was bent over, like her back was so bad that she was bent over. But she was old, but not that old. She was like in her 50s. And she says she starts to talk to her. And this woman basically starts telling her, which it's really weird, but sometimes you say more to a stranger than you'll do, how she had been sexually abused as a child for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, besides the natural stuff. And she says, well, we started to pray over her for this. She says, that lady, she says, and I talked to other people who said that for years, she had little by little kept curving over and over and over. She said, like, by the end of that, she started straightening up. And everybody, she says, all the people there, like that knew her from this village or whatever, were like, what? They didn't believe it, because everybody thought at that point that it was a medical thing. You know, you're getting older and you're slumped over and you're back and whatever. And when they came to address it because of that trauma that she had as a child, which was systemic, it wasn't like, which is bad enough, it was a one-time thing, but it was something systemic, that it was almost like that release, taking that away from her body is what had been doing that. In other words, I guess a lifetime of trying to live with it or deal with it had kind of, made her bow her down.
Our emotional, mental, spiritual state, we underestimate it so much in both directions. We both don't understand how much it can harm us if we store it in there, don't let it release. Yes. And we also underestimate how much miraculous healing we can receive, you know, by letting things go or moving, transforming that energy.
Right.
You know, but I believe too that my spine became that curvy S shape because of all the energy I stuffed down inside of me from all the trauma I had experienced as a child.
And right.
It wasn't sexual, but it was torture from at the hands of a dentist alongside a really unstable house situation with a father who was alcoholic who then died.
Okay.
So lots of trauma throughout my childhood.
Sure. Okay.
Insane. You know, I just sort of like stuffed it in. I didn't feel like anyone understood me. I didn't feel like I was going to get anything I needed. And so I just kept it inside, and my spine just started turning into an S. Yeah. And I really believe that that's what it is. I mean, there's no doctor who's going to say that. There's no doctor who's going to agree with that. But, you know, we see things over and over again. Did you know that the people who suffer from autoimmune, which I also have a late stage severe autoimmune disease, people who suffer from autoimmune almost always grew up in a household with a narcissist or an abuser. They're just kind of the same things, but right. So you had this household, almost all of those people develop autoimmune. Well, doesn't that tell you something? Of course, there's environmental things going on. Of course, there's parasites, physical and otherwise. Of course, there's other things. But actually, there's this one thing at the root, which is that you were taught to feel like you weren't good enough, and that you should maybe hate yourself, and that yourself is bad or broken. And what's autoimmune? It's yourself attacking yourself.
Right. It is exactly. Yeah. Your immunities fall by the wayside. And then of course, you know, you get you know, like things that basically, you know, cascade one event into the other when you do have an autoimmune response, you know, whichever way it manifests in your body. I've heard also that a lot of it is that, and again, it's really funny because let's say exactly like what you said, you could have siblings in that same environment. And then one is more thin-skinned, which is the one that develops the autoimmune problems, okay? Because it's just the way that they feel, perceive that those events. I'm not saying the other sibling is not affected.
Right.
But they never have those certain problems, autoimmune stuff, like the other
because
one.
Because they externalized it.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And you have introverts usually fall into that.
So you
extroverts.
Well, yeah. And people think I'm an extrovert for some reason because I have a show and I talk to people and I'm like, no, I struggled to get here. Actually, I would rather not talk to anyone ever.
That's so funny when people say that because, you know, some people, you know, if you tell them, hey, I'm going to take you to a party where you don't know anybody and I expect you to go and shake everybody's hand and be like, no,
like, oh, I don't even want to go to a party. Can I? Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, you want me to
what?
Yeah.
And then there's some people, it's like, oh, great, sure, okay.
Yeah, I had those Myers-Briggs tests, they used to have percentages. So you were, you know, somewhere on a spectrum between this thing and this thing. Now they just tell you you're either this thing or this thing. I can't find the spectrum ones anymore. But when they used to have the spectrum tests of Myers-Briggs, I was 51% extrovert. Okay. Which really just means I'm 50% introvert with a tiny, I'll step into the extrovert land and then like go back.
Yes. Yes. And it's basically the, you know, the motivation, like you said, like, okay, people don't believe I'm an introvert because I can do a podcast and speak.
Yeah.
Okay. But it all depends on what's motivating you as to, and then there's some people that, you know, these are your car salesmen, you know, or whatever, they're whatever. They could go and shake hands and whatever, kiss babies with strangers. And to others, you take an introvert and you're like, you want me to what?
Yes.
You must be crazy. But for my podcast listeners, Lindsay, what is your website address if anybody wants to get more information from you or book an appointment with you?
Yeah, I am at Rogue Ways, ways, not like waves in the ocean, but ways like pathways. Rogueways.org is the site. And on Rogue Ways, you can find everything I do. There is that link to that Thinkific site for anyone who wanted to go take that free course. That just, you scroll down like a second. It doesn't show up right away, but it's this big button that's just right there. It says courses. Along the top, you can click on spiritual services and just directly book with me any of the services I offer. I do sound healing. Okay. I do ceremonial healings. I do just coaching and talk sessions is what I call them. If you just want to talk through anything, and those can be really powerful in themselves. Sure. I do what I call guidance sessions, where we get in touch with your guides and allies and channel through some messages from them. All kinds of stuff on there. The books that I write are on there. I actually channel through some messages and they're in some books. The Key of Transformational Healing you mentioned is the most recent channeled book, and it is very profound. Even if you're spiritually advanced, I'd say it might blow your mind. It's a pretty cool text there. And I also just finished the fictional novel trilogy. So Trinity's Genesis, A Future Once Removed, is the last of the three fictional novel books. Those are also channeled through. They're really cool reads. So people out there like fiction, those are on the site too under books. And I also have a shop. And if this is coming out before Sunday, March 26th, I have an event, One Day of Brightness. And it is a spiritual healing in and of itself. It's a super fun day. And we also get to learn a lot from Chinese practitioner, herbalist, Laura Erica, the magical word weaver, and more. So it's going to be a fantastic
day. Let me ask you something. For somebody that couldn't, do you periodically have workshops or what?
I do. I just teach via usually the coaching and talk session now. I used to do a thing that I called Brighter You, which was a 3-month, I think, course where we met weekly. And the goal was to help people unlock their spiritual skills in service to themselves and the world. And so I just don't always get, enough people to make that like the best thing. And sometimes I do, and I have a ton of people. And so I'll do it if I get a lot of interest. And then other times I don't. So I don't have just like a regular offering of that. It just kind of comes and goes when the right people come together. But I do like to teach. So if people out there are also looking to, you know, understand their own experiences themselves or step into their own power, that is something I'd love to do. And so, like I said, I just do that through the coaching and talk sessions now. And then these, you know, Equinox and Solstice events, One Day of Brightness, I've actually, this is the, I think, 12th one we'll do. I do them every Equinox and Solstice. So they're like a teaching in themselves, and they're also a healing in themselves. And they're just a really fun day in alignment with the spring Equinox this time. Mm-hmm. And we'll do summer solstice next time. We just get as close as we can to that date while being on a Sunday. Exactly. So people can come. Yeah.
It has been absolutely fascinating to speak to you. Do you have any other books now in the works?
I do. What I actually do right now is I channel through. So the way the key of transformational healing came through and All Endings Are Beginnings is the other spiritual channeled book that are direct channeled word for word. Those two come about in little chunks. They'll just be little bursts. Okay. And so now I just do those on my Substack. So rogueways.substack.com if people want to subscribe to that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so those come out a couple times a week, usually. Sometimes more, sometimes less, just depending on what's going on. But I just do it as often as I'm called, at least. And so those are coming out bit by bit. And when I get a good chunk of them, there's going to be another book. So, yeah.
I know what you mean. And of course, now with the internet and Zoom, I hate to say it, or, you know, it facilitates us. Whereas before, people would, you have to physically go somewhere.
Yeah.
Now people can attend.
Can just go get grab it.
It has been absolutely great to speak to you, Lindsay. I want to wish you the best of luck on all your future projects.
Well, thank you so much, Marlene. It's been fantastic to meet you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you so much. Be well.
Bye-bye. Yeah. You know what? I agree with her that sometimes we have a lot of synchronicities happen to us. How's this? You have sometimes things happen that really don't mean anything. And then there's other things that if you look at, you go, man, what are the chances of this happening? The synchronicities, you know, some people, you know, some people say, okay, you know, you think of somebody, they call you, you meet them or you see them, or in some cases you're thinking of something and then all of a sudden you go someplace and, you know, you find that book or you meet that person or you see that video or that something. And sometimes people pick up on it right away. And then there's other people that dismiss it like, you know, it's just that was coincidental. All right. And actually, sometimes synchronicities is just the universe trying to like tap you on the shoulder and say, you know, you were wondering about that. You were asking about that. You were thinking about that. Here, hint, hint. Why don't you listen, look, visit, read this to help you along in whatever it is that you're thinking about, either to convince you or to give you an alternative or to make you think that's not really what I thought it was going to be. Because sometimes people think, you know, synchronicities or the universe is always to encourage you. Sometimes the encouragement is to let you know maybe what you're thinking this thing is, whatever that is not what you think it is. All right. And that happens to a lot of people. They make up in their head this thing of like, I want to do this. I want to go to this place. I want to do that. And they kind of like, wherever it is that they sourced it. And then it ends up being a big waste of time, or they get there or they do it. And they're like, man, this is not what I thought it was. What a waste of time. And then they stick it out, especially if there was any type of study done, like, man, I put so much effort and time, money into this. You know, I guess I'll just stick it out and do it. Sometimes synchronicities is just, I guess some people, and I know it depends on your personality. It all depends on how willing you are to take a hint. How's that? Instead of it being like in your face, like, oh, well, how was I to know? Because sometimes, or that was easy. You know, I was thinking about, I was thinking about going back and getting this certificate in my career. I don't know, whatever. Let's say something you're thinking about. And then all of a sudden something crosses your path where to point you, or all of a sudden you go to eat lunch with this friend and this friend brings somebody else along. And this person does exactly what that certification that you want to get. And here they are unexpectedly. You didn't even know they were going to be there. And you're able to have this conversation with this person, where they either encourage you and say, oh yeah, man, that's great. It was like, I did it. And it's, or no, you know what? When you get that certificate, this is really what comes with it. It was like, I did it. And I realized it wasn't worth my time and I didn't make the money. What? And some people can say, well, but yeah, that's the way synchronicities work. Or, you know, and sometimes it takes, and sometimes you have to also, I want to say, step back and let the universe deliver it in a certain way, instead of saying, well, you know, if I'm that synchronicity, I want to get it this way. It's like, you know, sometimes things come to you in just the way that you least expect it. And now I'm going to say the flip side of it. You know, one time, this was many, many years ago, I was listening. Oh my God, what's her name? Shoot. Okay. Marlene. And I know her name because, oh, I hate when this happens. She wrote back in the mid-2000s, she wrote a book about archetypes, you know, the rescuer, Marlene. I can't believe you can't remember her name. Okay, anyway. And one time I was listening to a podcast and she's talking about the same subject, synchronicities, you know, why should we pay attention to them, et cetera, et cetera. But then the other flip side of it that she said was, you know, she says one time, you know, I had somebody say, I broke my leg. What does that mean? She told the lady nothing. You know, in other words, there's things that happen to us that are not synchronistic or tied to any meaningful debate or meaningful, like, hey, you know, the universe is trying to tell you something. No, you just broke your leg. It happens. There's no further spiritual meaning behind that event. It's just that it's a human condition. It happens to people. Not everything has this happen to you because you're meant to like go to Everest and climb to the summit, which, by the way, I just found out that a bunch of people have died up there a lot. As a matter of fact, they call it, I think, the graveyard in the sky or something. But let me go back to this topic. So, and then, and I agree with her, and you know, and then you have, you know, this other school of thought where they'll say that there's like an organic, there's like a tie-in between our bodies and what we want. And let me give you an example. That same thing with a broken leg. Maybe we don't need it to get so drastic. But sometimes they say, let's say you receive an injury to the foot or the leg. All right. And sometimes that comes about as in somebody that wants to go forward. Let's say they want to go forward in their career, or they want to take a course, or whatever, but they're afraid. In other words, this is where we go into the debate of the conscious and the subconscious. The conscious conscious level, this person wants to think, well, you know what? I want to get that extra degree or that training, or, you know, maybe I need to go and go apply to a different department or that different company or that different title, whatever. I'm talking about going forward. All right. Sometimes it even entails leaving town, but okay. But let's go along with something that, and then they start getting a leg or foot injury. And sometimes this is the body's hesitancy, as in the subconscious being afraid of going forward. Of course, because what propels us is our legs. In other words, there's like a conflict between what we logically, consciously want and our subconscious mind, which is kind of wigged out because like doesn't want to go there because this is the unknown. This is, who knows what'll come with that. Let's stay here where you know what you're doing, even though you're probably could do that job, or and you're smart enough, or you have the, you know, the knowledge. No, but what if? And then, you know, of course, you extrapolate to the worst nth degree. You know, you don't know, you'll be a fool, you know, whatever. This happens. Even people, I've heard of people that they spend their careers not trying to get, let's say, promoted. And a lot of people say, man, I can't believe, why haven't you ever become a supervisor or manager promotion, or tried to do this other job that'll, you know, God knows, you know. And a lot of people are really like, and it's because there's something in them that fear overrides everything else, that subconsciously just rules the roost. It's like, oh, it'll be, yeah, well, you know what? I don't, yeah, it's okay. I don't really want that. And inside there's a part of them that's saying, yeah, you know, you could do that. And then right on the heels of it, they'll think of all the bad things that could happen if they decided to do that. And then, but I'm saying sometimes you'll see things like that actually manifest in certain injuries. Okay. Sometimes same thing with the arms, legs. I mean, I could do it's, you know, as far as when there's that conflict with the conscious and the subconscious mind, how you see it in certain things that happen to your body. Because again, and this is, and like I said, I ran across this a lot of times with my hypnosis work, where people in general are very, very, let me underline this, very resistant to change. I don't care how convinced they are on a logical level, on a conscious level of, I want to change this, I want to do this, or not stop doing it, whatever. And they're convinced I'm going to do it. And then things go awry a lot of different ways. And it's all because that subconscious part of their mind wants to keep them in what's known. And it takes a lot. It's almost like, and I've said it, you know, I don't know, I'm sure people, even when they were in school or the first day you go to a new job, you're uncomfortable. You don't know anybody. Nobody knows you. You know, you might be walking around the building and you're like, man, I could get lost in here. You know, the boss, I don't know. And it's really, it's a very, very uncomfortable feeling. And some people run from that feeling like, I'll get out. You know, that's, and then, you know, a couple of months go by, you come back and you're good. You're good. Hey, I know where I'm going. I know what I'm doing. It's like, it's okay. And that feeling is gone. All right. And a lot of people fear that scenario, that feeling that it causes them at all costs. It could be in a lot of different areas. This, I'm just giving you that as an example, where some people, that feeling of uncomfortableness is, they're so avoidant of it, that that's when the subconscious mind like gives them all the reasons, plays out all the worst case scenarios. You know, basically they sabotage, for lack of a better word, their own best intentions. And it takes a lot to keep going back and saying, I'm not, you know, I want that. Yeah. Okay. You know, I feel uncomfortable. Same thing. You know, people go to the gym and they're thinking everybody's staring at them. Oh, man. Okay. But I'm going to go. And it's uncomfortable. It makes you feel bad. And you're like, man, do I really want to go this? And that's when you see people come up with a million and one reasons why, you know, not to go. That's the way subconscious works. And then there's something a little bit different, which is what Lindsay was talking about, like the parasitic attachments, where, you know, sometimes it's not your willpower that's the only thing there, or lack of willpower. How's that? Okay, but I do agree with her with what she said. Sometimes things happen to people that are beyond their control. You know, it is. It just, things happen. You know, some people say, well, you know, you did this and you did that, and or you were here or you were there. So when this happened, come on. I understand. Sometimes people get themselves in trouble all by themselves. Then there's other things that happen to everybody. Everybody. Whether you want to call it wrong place, wrong time, just circumstances, karma, I don't, whatever you like, which stuff happens to you. And I agree that some things, it's not like, there's nothing I could do about this. Now, I do agree with her that once you get beyond that moment, whether there's somebody to blame, if somebody did something to you or didn't or whatever. And you get beyond that point. Now, what is within your control is what are you going to do about it? Are you going to continue to live in the shadow of this event or with an S, plural, events, depends, or not? That is difficult. Absolutely it is. There's something that you just don't do one day and then, oh, that's it. No, it's an ongoing daily thing until you get beyond it, you know, until you convince yourself to force yourself in some cases to confront bad memories, bad feelings. I think one of the most difficult has got to be that feeling that there's nothing you can do to undo or reverse or erase what that event was. Time travel is not possible. And I think that's really difficult for a lot of us, especially when it's a really bad event, to face. That can never be undone. Never. And once you come to that point, instead of trying to fix it, replay it, whatever, then it's when you say, okay, you know what? I can undo it, but this is what I'm going to do from this point onward. And live with it. Deal with it. It's like, it's there. And by the way, I've mentioned it before. Not forget it. If it was up to them, if they could sometimes even erase that event from their memory, which some people do if it's traumatic enough and it happens early in life, you know, that's when you have these people that have those hidden memories. But let's not go there. That's in the weeds. I'm talking about people that have this memory and they wish, man, I wish I could live without this memory being inside my head. And sometimes that's not going to happen either. You can't undo it. You can't forget it. And so what are you left with? I'm going to have to live with it. And I'm not going to live under its shadow. I'm not going to be victimized by that memory. Because yes, you can be victimized by a memory. Everybody thinks of, sometimes, how's this? Sometimes people think that being a victim, which I'm not into victimology at all. Some people think that it's when something is done to you. All right? To you individually or in a group. Sometimes you're a victim by witnessing something. All right? How is that? Because you see it, you witness it, it does something to your psyche because it's there. You see it. I can't unsee it, especially if it was something really bad. And God forbid it was more than once. So in other words, even though you weren't the target or there was no physical aggression or whatever, the trauma's there. You witnessed it. You were witness. Like I said, and sometimes it depends on the individual person. Some people are more affected than others. But then, and like I said, and sometimes it's beyond your control. You couldn't like go like this, like I dream of genie and poof yourself out of there. Okay, then later on you're like, okay, so is this going to be my story? Am I forever going to be victimized by that event, whatever it was? All right, doesn't mean I'm saying it never happened. No, I know it did. But am I always going to have to live with that dominant over me? Because really, ultimately, it is your choices, which is what I think Lindsay was referring to. That part is your responsibility. And God knows there's a lot of people that do spend the rest of their lives under the effect of certain events that were really bad. And by the way, when I said that thing about your perception is your reality, you could be really, really badly affected by something, whatever it was, that some other person, you're like, man, what is the big deal? What? You know, you're scarred because of that? And it happens. But again, and some people want to like, oh, what do you mean? You know, and they're like trying to convince this other person, you know, how horrific or how bad or how deep or what. It's like, stop. Whatever. If this for you was something that curled up in here and you cannot get rid of it, you can't outrun it, outmedicate it, whatever. That's you. It's like, you know, you got to love yourself with all your foibles. And say, well, you know what? I'm that kind of person. Just have a great imagination, whatever. I can't forget it. Right now that I accept that about myself and forgive myself, that because that's just the way I am. That's the way I'm made. Now, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to try not to dwell on it. I'm going to try to go beyond it. I'm going to realize there's nothing I can do. The thing about, I can't do anything about it except move on and try to be happy. In other words, because some people sometimes also, they have these events that occur to them, which means, wow, if I saw this witnesses was victimized, experienced it, well, you know what, then that's it. I'm done for the rest of my life. I'm going to be tainted by this. And I'm going to be either sad or anxious or whatever, because, hey, that happened to me. Why? No, there's, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen where that's written down. That's a choice you make. That's a choice you make. And you know what? And it's in, and I want to say in some cases, depending on what it is that occurred, it's something that you have to do on a daily basis and distance yourself. And I'm sure everybody's had bad things happen. Like, and I made this example before, that when the event is fresh, it hurts and you can't escape it. And maybe you have difficulties sleeping, and then as time goes by, it starts to ease. A little by little, you start thinking less of it. And then 10, 15 years, you'll think of that event or that person or that whatever, a pet died. I don't know, whatever. And it's not a good memory, but that emotion that you had, whatever you thought of it, that raw emotion that made you feel physically bad, it's not there anymore. And we have that ability to do that even with the hardest things. It's not pleasant. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't dwell on it. And then that's another thing. Sometimes people think, oh, if I don't dwell on it, or I don't think it, or I relive it, or I re-examine it, or I witness it, you know, like testify, I'm dishonoring that event. Why? That's like, oh, let me suffer for the sake of suffering. What? None of that. You know what? If you really want to honor yourself, you say, I got to get beyond this. I'm going to try to live the best life I can the way I am with my foibles, but I am not about to sacrifice my sanity, my well-being, spiritual, physical, emotional, mental on the altar of whatever this was. I'm not. I refuse to. And yeah, and there's going to be days that it's going to be like, wow, this is really tough. Or I'll see something that, I'm going to use that word. I hate this word, but I get triggered. In other words, almost like a PTSD moment, like, ah, God, that I saw that movie, or I witnessed something, and man, it brought that memory. It's going to happen. And then you know what you do. You grit your teeth and you go, okay, but that's not me anymore. That happened a long time ago. And I know I'm going to be really like a very, I made my peace with it. I've made my peace with it. And off you go. Okay. Anyway, guys, I hope you like this show. I think, you know, a link to Lindsay's website will be on the credits of the show. And I've got a lot of great guests coming on. All right. So I hope you come back every week and join me. Don't forget to sign up for my Substack newsletter. You can go to mppelliser.com, myghostchronicles.com. And of course, like always, you can find links to videos. You can find links to the podcasts. All of them, all of my podcasts, whether it's Stories of the Supernatural, Nightshade Diary, or Supernatural Storytime, I have links there that you can listen on the browser or download the MP3 file without commercial interruption. Let me underline that, without commercial interruption, because I have a lot of people, sometimes they'll listen, you know, on different podcasts, and, you know, you get these commercial interruptions, and it's always at the wrong time. So if you want to go that route, I have all the shows from the very beginning, from number one. And that's another thing, on the newsletter, I always include links to some of the older shows, also the podcasts, some of my articles, things like that. And again, I list giveaways if I have new books coming out, and I'm going to give some out for free on Amazon, anything like that nature, I'm going to announce it on the newsletter. So again, please come back every week. We have a lot of interesting and fantastic inquiries to delve into. Till next time, take care.